Now, there are two major music biopics coming out later this month. One is slightly bizarre, Better Man, about the life of Robbie Williams. It's very odd because he's being played by a monkey. Actually, here's a little clip to start us off with this morning.
I know what you're thinking. What's with the monkey? I'm Robbie Williams. I'm one of the biggest pop stars in the world. But I've always seen myself a little less evolved.
And another movie that is coming has already been tipped for multiple Oscars, which stars Timothée Chalamet as Bob Dylan. Music biopics can be tricky to bring to the big screen successfully. And joining me now to go through some of the best and worst in this genre is movie buff Brian Lloyd. Brian, thank you so much for coming back and talking us through all of these. That sounded very interesting, but...
To be honest, I have a lot of hope for that. So it's directed by the guy that did The Greatest Showman, which everyone loves.
Well, that's my favourite,
And I appreciate the fact that Robbie Williams is aware enough. He's trying to do something different.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest about it, like musical biopics, they're 10 a penny nowadays. And not only are they 10 a penny, but they all stick to a very, very rote formula.
Yeah.
They started off and, you know, came from nothing and they had a dream and then they were discovered and then they become famous and then they can't handle the fame and then the fame gets too much and then they have to go away and find out the reason why they got into it in the first place and then they have the comeback gig and then it's, you know,
I think I've seen that one.
We've all seen that one, Laura. We've all seen that one.
Okay, well, let's talk about it. So, like, what are the ingredients that make a biopic about a musician or a band great?
Well, really, it's just about why it is that people love them, why it is that they were so good at what they did, what set them apart, and then on top of that as well, why was it that the emotion in their songs come from, you know, that sort of way. Like, you look at something like, say, for example, Control, which is all about Joy Division and Ian Curtis and, you know, his kind of mental health struggles. And, you know, you listen to the songs of Joy Division, like, they're quite dark and all the rest of it. But when you watch Control, you realise that, no, this actually came from a very real place for him and that it really did have this impact. It's, yeah, it's really just about kind of capturing what was it that made them special, what was their impact, and doing that in an authentic and kind of, I guess, emotionally believable way.
If you're going to watch one of these movies, do you think that you have to have an in-depth, like, knowledge of the music in them, or should they be able to be a standalone movie?
They should. I mean, they should be a standalone. And then the idea is that, you know, if you have a passing interest in it, you should be able to watch this film and understand why it is that people get it, why it is that people love it. And then if you are a big, massive fan, if you do have that real kind of obsession for it, you can watch this film and be like, yep, I remember that. I know that scene and I know what that's about and I know what they're talking about there and I get that reference. And then that kind of scratches, I suppose, that itch on their brain that, you're seeing that story being told and, you know, you're seeing it on screen and all the rest of it.
It's the nostalgia factor as well everybody's always chasing, is that, like, you know, I remember when...
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk about how musicians are involved in the process. Yeah. Like, what's your feelings on that? Because sometimes they've got a call on the final cut, like the final edit of everything. Like, are we really getting the full picture?
No, not at all. You're absolutely not. Like, I mean, the only example I've ever seen of an artist being involved with the film and the film actually having some level of authenticity and some level of integrity is actually Elton John's Rocket Man.
Yeah.
And that's because Elton John is, A, he's been around for years. So it's not as if he can suddenly, you know, rewrite history and reimagine himself as this clean-cut character when he was anything but. But what the film does is that it places it in context. So when he is, like, screaming and roaring at people in the film, and Taron Egerton does a great job of really getting that rage that was inside Elton John, you understand that it was because he was, you know, dealing in serious drug and alcohol abuse and that... It did play up to all of his worst excesses, you know? But by the same token, the film really does get at what made him so good, and it has all the songs in it, and it has all those big musical moments in it. And, you know, there have been films, believe it or believe it not, where the artist had no input in it whatsoever, and they've been crap. And a really good example of that, I would say, is there was a film called Stardust, where the production, it was about David Bowie, you know, it was about his first US tour that went terribly, terribly badly, but they couldn't afford to license any of his music, and obviously the David Bowie didn't want to be involved in the film either because he just, you know, had no interest in talking about that part of his life, and the film is terrible. And I'm not saying it would have been a better film if they were able to play, you know, Life on Mars or any of David Bowie's big songs, but at the same time, you're kind of watching this like, this is just terrible. Like, I don't care about this. How are we supposed to care about any of this when we can't even connect it to the music that we have, you know? But, no, generally speaking, when the artist is involved, you can generally tell that it's like, they're trying to kind of sand off the edges a little bit. They're trying to kind of make it a bit more kind of palatable. And even, you know, even in something like Straight Outta Compton, for example, mm-hmm. which was all about N.W.A. And I mean, that's a, you know, they were basically like a punk band. But obviously they had like, they were doing rap and all the rest of it, but they were very much anti-establishment, anti-authority, anti-police and all the rest of it. But when you watch that film back, it's like, well, okay, you know, the LAPD was a deeply corrupt institution. Police violence against black community was very, very prevalent. And they put that into the film, but then they leave out a lot of other, you know, darker stuff that N.W.A. Yeah. got up to as well. So it's like, yeah, they're being honest and all the rest of it, but at the same time, they're kind of leaving out a lot of it.
Is it important that the actors who are playing these roles have a strong resemblance to the musical icons that they're portraying?
Can't hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it's more about if the actor believes that they are that person, you know, that yeah. sort of way. Like, again, good example would be like Elvis and Austin Butler.
Yeah. That he actually thought that he was. No, but I mean, he got so into being yeah. Elvis that he didn't stop being Elvis.
No. Like, I interviewed him for it, and he still had the accent. Like, and I did, this was the thing. Like, I remember interviewing him, was like, God, he really does sound like Elvis even now. And then it was only afterwards that I realised, oh no, he doesn't sound like that at all.
No.
He just was locked into it for so long that the voice just became part of him. Like, now he's lost it and all the rest of it. Look at Doom Part 2, and you know yeah. he's gotten rid of it. But no, I mean, yeah, I it can't hurt. It does help. I mean, certainly in some films, like, there's one film, I don't know if you saw it, it's called Maestro, mm-hmm. and it's about this composer in the 70s, and it was played by Bradley Cooper. Leonard Bernstein is his name. And there was a famous thing that Bradley Cooper wore this prosthetic nose.
Yeah.
And a lot of people had a lot of problems with it because Leonard Bernstein was Jewish, and there was a whole thing of like, oh, this is, you know, it's kind of insulting to Jewish people that, you know, he has the big prominent nose and all the rest of it. But, you know, you look at pictures of Leonard Bernstein and he did have a kind of prominent nose and all the rest of it. So it's sort of like, okay, is it insulting or is it just trying to accurately capture the physical likeness of the person in question? I don't think, I mean, it definitely, it can hurt, but I don't think it really matters. Like, again, it's that thing of if the actor is convincing enough, you will see past how much they don't look alike if they believe it, and you'll believe it.
You buy into it.
Yeah, you buy into it. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the music. I know you kind of touched on it there with Stardust, and it is, I mean, these are really and truly all about the music, but what are your thoughts about letting the actors sing the songs themselves? Like Marissa
Abella.
Who sang all the songs in Amy Winehouse's Back to Black. Is it a bit risky?
It is. Oh, it's definitely risky because, like, on the one hand, it's like, okay, if they don't sound anything like the person that they're playing, you're just like, oh, well, I know that song so well. They don't sound anything like that. But then, on the other hand, if their mouth in it is in, like, it's been tracked and, you know, it's, they're singing over the voice of the person, you're taken out of it then because you're like, well, you're not singing that. I know that's Freddie Mercury, or I know that's Elton John, or I know that's whomever, you know? And It's risky, no matter what, it's risky. Like, but I think, to be honest, it's, even if they don't sound alike, but they have the attitude and they have the kind of performance, and that will carry the day, I think. Like, and another example I would give for that would be something like Joaquin Phoenix and Walk the Line. I mean, he does sound a bit like Johnny Cash, but he has the attitude, he has the presence, he has that kind of darkness, like, you know, that kind of way. He's able to play it very well. And Reese Witherspoon, actually, in fact, when she played June Carter Cash in that, she sounded exactly like her. Exactly like her. And actually, I think what was so good about it, and that's why I think Reese Witherspoon won for it, was that she got the progression in June Carter Cash's voice and persona. Because at the start of the film, when we first meet her, she's really kind of happy-go-lucky and is almost like a comedy character, and she's, you know, that really kind of high-pitched kind of thing. But then towards the end of the film, she's much more mature, her voice is kind of deepened, and she has more presence in it, and she's able to kind of accurately portray that level of maturity, I guess, you know. So it's a big risk no matter what.
It just kind of depends.
It really does depend. Yeah, we're right away saying depends. I could just shrug and say, it depends.
Maybe. Do you think that, like, well, you do actually think that this has an impact on people's perception of the artist? Like, it does.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think what it does is that it will reintroduce the music to a completely new audience. And again, that's something that I think, you know, Baz Luhrmann did very, very well in Elvis, and he talked about it a lot, which was that, you know, the younger generation, the TikTok generation, Gen Z, whatever you want to call it, they had I'm not being dismissive. I'm just saying that's
what they're called.
That was the words that he used when I interviewed him. Name drop. he talked about it that they had no idea about how popular Elvis was. They couldn't connect it to anything. So by him using contemporary music and then meshing in an Elvis song, it's like, remember how big this song was? That's how big this song was in the 50s and the 60s. That's how much of an important kind of moment this song was. So it's really just about, what does it do for kind of the songs? It brings them back into popular consciousness. It reminds people of why they loved it so much. It doesn't even have to be a biopic. Like, look at like Stranger Things and what that did for Kate Bush and Running Up That Hill. They completely reintroduced that song to a completely new audience.
All right, let's get down to the nitty gritty, all right? Can you give us some examples of what you would class as essential biopics that we might want to check out over Christmas and why?
Okay, so the first one I'll go with is Ray.
Okay.
Which is about Ray Charles. For you don't know who Ray Charles is, he was one of the most famous American singer-songwriters. He was blind. He wrote a raft of songs in the 50s and 60s, but did it during a time when, you know, there was deep racism in America, there was segregation in America. He campaigned against it. And it's just really about his life and his times and where he kind of like found his inspiration along the way. Jamie Foxx played him. He actually sat down and learned how to sing and sound exactly like Ray Charles before he did the film. And there's like loads of, if you ever get the DVD or the Blu-ray of it, there's loads of behind the scenes footage of him literally playing the piano right next to Ray Charles and trying to get all his vocal ticks right and all the rest of it. And Jamie Foxx won the Oscar for it, deservedly so. It's a brilliant film, still holds up, and the music is great as well.
We have a clip of it here, have a listen to this.
As a friend, I'm telling you, man, your slip is hanging.
Your slip is hanging. You've been hanging out with us country boys too much, man. Look, don't worry about this, man. If this monkey gets too heavy on my back, man, I will get an organ grinder, man, and put him to work.
So that's Jamie Foxx.
Yeah. He sounds exactly like that. Yeah. It's uncanny how much he sounded exactly like Ray Charles. That's how good he was.
And then, in your opinion, since it's Christmas time, tell us about a few turkeys that you think we should avoid at all costs.
Okay, I'm going to start off with Back to Black. I hate it. Did you see it?
I loved it.
What?
Yeah. And I've had so many arguments on it.
Tell me why you liked it. I'm not going to fight with you. Just tell me why you liked it.
I know it was a very sugar-coated version of Amy Winehouse's life, and I understand that, but I enjoyed watching it. I thought that Marissa was class. I know you're like about to kick off me here.
I
went with three of my friends, and we all came out of it afterwards, and we're like, that was great. And it was so sad, and I like cried at the end of it, because I remember vividly where I was when Amy Winehouse passed away, and I was living in London at the time, and then everybody was flocking to where her house
Camden,
was. And obviously since they put up the statue since, and it was so sad because she was so talented and the way that she was hounded by the press and all that. And I know that it was watered down, but I still really liked it.
But not even the way that they kind of let Mitch Winehouse off the hook and all that.
Well, that's again,
did you
because
see the documentary?
Yeah,
now?
Because he was involved in the movie. See, this is where we're going with it. They let him. That's, and I get that, and it was very much like, oh, I'm daddy's girl, and that bit was annoying. And how even with Blake and everything, I was like, oh God, whatever. But I still thought there were parts of it that were done very well. Watered down, yes. Was I looking for the historical facts of it? No. As a movie, I enjoyed it.
Sure. No, yeah, fair point. Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I mean, it is obviously a film. It is, you know, a biopic, and it is fitting it into that kind of structure and all the rest of it. But Marissa Vela, I'm sorry, she didn't sound a thing like her. She didn't sound anything like her.
But also, back to our earlier point of the argument that we had, I thought she had the right attitude.
You think?
Brian.
You think?
Might have opened a can of worms between the two of us. We might have to take this off air because we could be going for a while.
Yeah, we could be. Sorry, yeah. You really think, but like, I mean, it was a caricature.
Robbie Williams is being played by a monkey.
I have respect for that. At least he's being honest. At least he's being honest about it. Like, but here's another thing. The story isn't gone so long out of the news that we need this film, that this story needs to be told. It needs more distance. Like, if you're going to do it like that, like, I mean, that's from Cynthia. Like, you and I both remember when she died. Like, we remember all this when this was going on. Did you need to see a film about it? Did you need to see it put in context? We all lived it. Like,
I'll watch it again.
Right. Well, whatever.
Brian, enjoy your Christmas.
Yeah,
we
you
will
too.
See you in the new year.
You will.
Hopefully. That was film and TV journalist Brian Lloyd. We'll be right back after these. 2FM.